Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, are you ready to do the show?
Yep, ready to go, Jim.
Are you sure?
Yeah, why?
Well, you're not going to wear that. A t-shirt and cut-off shorts?
Yeah, should I not?
Let me paraphrase the great Lloyd Cole. Dude, you need a new tailor. Patrick, today we were out record shopping.
Yes, we were.
And not just for ourselves, right?
No, for some of our patrons.
Some of our patrons.
Yeah, which is cool.
We have a couple of patrons who donate at the level, which we go record shopping for them occasionally. And we have one of those on the call here today.
Yes, we do.
But before we get to that, I just want to understand one thing about your mindset of record shopping.
Okay.
When you're buying for somebody else like this,
mm-hmm.
is it like a dollar for them, a dollar for you? Is that kind of how it works? Do you end up spending more or less on yourself than you do on the others?
I think it turned out to be one for you, one for me this time. And last time. And the time before that. So, yes, that's what happens every time, I think.
Yeah.
It's hard not to.
It is hard, man. You know, yeah. you see things and you're like, I really need to get that.
Should I get that today? Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mentioned the record shopping, and
yep.
if anybody wants to be a patron of the show and get cool stuff like that, you can go to patreon.com/suburbspod. This show is called Rockin' the Suburbs, and we talk about music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We're at Patrick's house today, and with us via Skype is one of those big-time patrons.
Yeah.
Eric Lorenz. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Jim and Patrick. How are you guys?
Really good, Eric. How are you?
Very good.
So, Eric, before we get into the topic, so one of the deals, too, is Eric gets to come on once every 3 months and
yep.
pick a topic, which
Great.
We're going to discuss today. Before
mm-hmm.
we do that, though, let's talk about the records you received last time. Was there anything good in there?
Oh, yeah. I liked a lot of it. There was the Chris Mars. I think that was his first album
yep.
after The Replacements. I enjoyed that. There was a Stereo Lab, which had Patrick's fingerprints all over it. It was a VHS or Beta, and that one surprised me because I had listened to an earlier album, and I enjoyed it, but this one really jumped out at me. And then there was a Frank Black, I forget which one it was,
yeah.
but it was the one, I think, where he recorded with the Nashville studio musicians.
Mm. Yeah.
And I had no idea that was in his catalog, and that's a fun one to listen to.
People don't
know.
Of course,
I got my R.E.M. Monster.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, got to have that.
I did find a copy of R.E.M. Monster today. We went to a different record store today, Eric.
Yeah.
And I did find only one copy of Monster.
Just one.
And it was $5.
Wow.
So I did not buy that. You're not going to get another Monster.
No.
This time.
That's outrageously
priced. I was really hoping. I thought that'd be funny if he got another one.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But no.
I think every time
you get a Monster.
R.E.M. Monster.
Yeah.
Every time you get one.
Yeah.
But that would be terrible.
And they're putting out like a special anniversary edition of that.
Oh, are they? I wonder if people start selling that back.
I don't
know.
Exactly. I don't know. But real quickly, I want to say... that was an exciting little bundle that I really enjoyed
yeah,
what we picked out
so
for
fun.
You because I think in a couple of those you mentioned, the Chris Mars and that Frank Black are surprising records, aren't they? Like you go into both of those with maybe not the highest of expectations and they overperform, I think.
I didn't know what to expect with the Chris Mars. Frank Black, I was expecting something totally different.
Right.
Yeah, you know, not to go down this rabbit hole too much more, but I'll just say one thing about the Chris Mars record. To me, it's really interesting because it's like he saved up this one good album that he had in him, but he didn't try to like follow it up and do any more. He was like, I got this out. I got it done. I said what I want to say, and now I'm done, which to me, it's got to be hard as a musician or, you know, a composer to do that once and then walk away from it. You know what I mean? Like, that's all
yeah.
I'm doing.
Isn't he an artist now?
Yeah,
so he's got other artistic outlets.
He does, and his paintings go for, you know, a million times more than he ever probably made on music. So they're very, very highly thought of
that's
and
right.
collected.
He's still out there expressing himself.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Just in a different
that's
way.
A great point.
And that's apparently that's his true passion now.
Yeah,
that's
apparently
what,
it is.
That's what he
mm-hmm.
wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as you mentioned, he's quite successful at it. He gets,
very good.
You know, showings and he sells his work and
yeah.
he's highly regarded.
Yeah.
So good for Chris.
Yep.
All right. In fact, he's probably the most successful of all of
yeah, he probably is.
The former Replacements in some way, don't you think?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so you will soon be getting, Eric, you will soon be getting another delivery.
Yeah.
We just went today, and I'm not going to say what we got, but hopefully you'll enjoy it as
good
much
stuff.
As the first one.
Good stuff.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, very good. So what was the topic you picked for us today?
Today I'd like to talk about two albums with anniversaries ending in five.
Okay.
And the reason I picked that was that I always enjoy when you guys do the album anniversary episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you haven't done one in a while.
True.
But rather than me trying to pick out one seminal album that was celebrating a round anniversary, I decided to talk about a couple of what I think are very good albums that were well-received at the time, but that you don't think about much today, or at least I don't. And in fact, before I was getting ready for this episode, I probably hadn't listened to them in their entirety for quite some time.
Okay.
So the first album celebrating the all-important 35th anniversary is Lloyd Cole and the Commotions' Rattlesnake. That was released in October of 1984, so it's right at its 35th anniversary.
Okay.
I think I first became aware of this from the airplay for Perfect Skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was their lead single. And Lloyd Cole was only 23 at the time, which is surprising. It's a very literate album overall. I was an engineering major in college, so I think some of the literary references went right over my head, but I still appreciate them. I did get the one about Yves Marie Saint and On the Waterfront.
Yeah.
But you know, I think looking, I did listen to it, and I think that it holds up very well. There's not a lot in the production or the instrumentation that dates it. I think it is a quintessential album of college rock of the mid-80s. It's got a Django rock feeling on some of the songs, but again, they don't sound dated. So that's why I wanted to talk about that one.
You know,
are you guys familiar with that
absolutely.
One?
Absolutely. We pulled the vinyl out of my collection. We're looking at it right now, and it's always been a favorite of mine, too. And I'll say this. I have I had not listened to it in quite a while either, and I played the first side yesterday, last evening. And I tell you what, just around 5 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock, when you're sort of relaxing a little bit, maybe you're having an adult beverage of some sort and just sort of relaxing into the evening. This record to me, Eric, has a really cool, I guess what I'm trying to say is it around this time when this record came out, like 85 or something like that, I was still very much enamored of Dylan and Lou Reed and all these people I considered these big heroes, but I hadn't really heard anybody who was contemporary who could even call up some of that magic. But I think on this album, Lloyd Cole does it. And I think a lot of it is the wordplay, but the music is very simple. The organ plays a key part in this record, and his lyrics are very, very evocative. You know, what is the line, Eric? It's read some Norman Mailer or get a new tailor or something like that, which is like one of the greatest couplets. Like, first of all, get smarter. Second of all, get some better clothes, you know, which I always thought was so smart. But yet they don't, you know, they don't try to overdo the music. It's not like they're trying to invent anything musically here, but the settings were very much set up to accentuate and showcase Lloyd's vocals. And the music, you know, is just so tasteful and so excellent. It's just great rock, you know,
right,
soul
yeah.
folk, you know. It's really a great record. I hope
I don't think it's aged very badly at all.
That's exactly right. I think you hit that right on the head. When you listen to it, it does not in any way smack of the 80s. You know, I bet if I played this for one of my daughters or something in a blind test, they would have no idea what period it came from. You know, I bet if you told them it was, you know, it was new, they probably would say, sure, I could buy that, you know, without a doubt, which is a high compliment.
One thing that I didn't notice before, or I wasn't really listening for it, was that there are some string arrangements on a couple of songs, like Rattlesnake, mm-hmm. that really jumps out, and that kind of actually drives the song. I think maybe, I forget what the other one was, if it was Patience or Are You Ready to Be Heartbroken?
Yep.
It struck out at me.
So what attracted you to this record, Eric?
Initially, it was hearing Perfect Skin on the radio. Just the melody and the wordplay, as Patrick was talking about. I mean, it's kind of dense, but, you know, it doesn't hurt the overall song. So, and then I'm sure I read about it in Rolling Stone or some other magazine and decided to pick it out. And, I mean, since then, I think that Rattlesnakes has become one of my favorite songs of all time. So, and I think I agree with Patrick. The first side is just all killer. There are some good songs on the second side, but the first side is really where they knock it out of the park.
Yeah, and that side ending with Forest Fire is like amazing. That's my song mm-hmm. from this record. I just love that song. But Are You Ready to Be Heartbroken, man? That, you know, also is just an amazing tune. And you know, it's really funny, just so strange, I think, at least today, right, Jim? We were checking out of the record store just an yeah. hour ago, and we just got to chatting with the guy behind the counter at the store, and basically we asked his permission if we could film a little bit inside the store, you know, to kind of show us looking through records and things. But we got onto the subject of our podcast, and we told him we were going to be talking about Lloyd Cole, and he said, oh, I met Lloyd Cole, what was it, like last year at a solo show or yeah. something in Annapolis, and he asked him if Rattlesnakes was a concept album, because this guy at the record store always thought it was a concept album. And, you know, Lloyd Cole said, no, you know, it wasn't a concept album, a bunch of songs I wrote. But as I was thinking about that, I was like, I could see that, you know, sort of the characters and everything. It could be like a little right. suite. It's pretty, I thought it was a cool observation. Good on him for asking that question.
Yeah, I mean, he did say a couple. I think Rattlesnakes was based on a short story or something.
Oh, like, really?
Over my interesting. Head as an engineer.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing was Lloyd Cole, man. He was so kind of, he was like really cool looking with that, you know, like the turtleneck and the hair, and he had that cool accent, and he just seemed so cool and reserved. He seemed like an update on the Beat Generation. And yeah, I don't know. For me, it's a really, I love this record. And I think part of it is like, wow, it is possible, you know, in a contemporary setting to pull off something that cool still. You know, you just have to sort of know how to do it the right way. And gosh, I can't believe it's been 35 years.
Yeah.
The record still feels really fresh.
I think, you know, Lloyd Cole got some good critical acclaim, but he never really quite got the American audience that maybe he deserved. Do you think?
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure why. And,
I don't know either.
You know, like Eric said, I think if you were going to make, at least if I was going to make a compilation, let's say like a mixtape of college rock, like what is college rock for future generations? I would definitely have at least one song from this record on there, maybe two, one on each side of a 90-minute tape. Right, Eric? Because it just speaks to that time. And I think there was a, you know, a crowd, but certainly not as big as perhaps he could have been, because I think he had an amazing gift for pop melody too. It wasn't right. like he was just, you know, doing this Leonard Cohen thing that was kind of dark and him reciting poetry or anything like that.
No, I mean, he was much more contemporary
yeah.
in his instrumentation. So I don't really know. I have to admit though, after this album, I picked up one more of his album.
Yep.
And then I just kind of, he fell off the map as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, I mean, the next record I think was called Easy Pieces, maybe something like that. And it
yeah,
had
that's right.
couple really good songs on it. Trying to think. There was one I really, really love, Cut Me Down and Brand New Friend. Those were both on that record. But, you know, I think that Lloyd, at least from what I understand, has sort of said like, oh, the lyrics on the, you know, my early lyrics were like so naive and I was so young. But that's what I love about it. You know, it is mm-hmm. like your notebook from college where you were really pouring your heart and soul into everything. And, you know, even, I don't know, there's Charlotte Street. Now I'm looking at side two. That's an incredible tune as well. There's just some really good stuff on here.
All right. Great pick.
Really, really good. Now, I got to ask you, Eric, while we have you, how do you feel about, I'm looking here on Spotify and some other places. There's, of course, there's the 2004 deluxe edition of Rattlesnakes. I mean, of course. How do you feel about that, Eric, when you got an album that you love and suddenly there's five discs or whatever? Like, I don't know. I've never been particularly enthusiastic about that kind of stuff.
I think five discs is probably too much for this album. Yeah. And I just have the vinyl, and then I bought the CD when it came out.
Yeah.
I think I wouldn't mind getting the expanded edition. I think has some original mixes. I believe that Rick Ocasek remixed a few of the songs.
That is correct.
Including Forest Fire. So yep. That would be nice to track down. I don't know that I need all the demos or that,
go
that deep down the rabbit hole, but I think as much as I like this album, I think it would be interesting to hear what else the band was working on around that time frame.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And some of the covers they may have recorded as influences is always interesting, too. I'm exaggerating, folks. There's not five CDs.
No, it's only two. Yeah. I just looked it up. But I think your bigger point, though, is that this has become a phenomenon over the last 15 to 20 years or so to put out, oftentimes on anniversaries, an anniversary edition of an album. That's exactly what the R.E.M. Monster thing
is.
Expanded with, demos and outtakes and some live tracks from the time or things like that. With some exception, it doesn't really appeal to me that much.
Yeah.
But part of that is because I think you and I have discussed this before, Patrick. I'm always like, if I got so much money to spend on records, I'd rather get something I don't have in my collection than sort of rebuy something I already have.
Yeah, right. Especially if it's demo versions that maybe the original artist never even intended for anyone to hear. They were just work tapes and, or something like that. Yeah. I mean, if he was my friend and he made me a tape of that, that's one thing. But yeah.
But I can see it from the artist's standpoint. If you sort of, I'm sure there are accountants who figured this out, like, X number of people are hardcore fans are going to buy this, and it costs us this much to do because you're not really creating new material. So, you hire somebody to write some good liner notes and put together like some kind of nice booklet,
Exactly.
And, and you're going to sell X number of copies. And so from the artist's perspective, hey, go for it, make some more money.
Seriously.
That's fine. But
yeah. And I just want to really quick before we move on is just put something out there on the record. I asked the guy at the record store today about this, and he didn't know anything about it. But I'm looking here on Lloyd Cole's website. He's a huge golfer, and he's a big golf fan. So he even has a golf tab on his website. But from what I infer, it looks
he is Scottish, right?
Yeah. He plans his tours now around where he can play golf. So good for Lloyd.
I mean,
he's arrived.
There you go.
Although I don't know if he was born in Scotland, but
yeah, I'm not sure.
But nevertheless,
I think University of Glasgow, though. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in Scotland, though, isn't there a story that like if you're born in there's this town in Ohio called Massillon, Ohio, that has like in Canton over there, like that area that has like crazy good, like high school football teams. They're like really good. And a baby who's born in the hospital there, a boy, gets like a little football.
Oh,
like they put
right?
it like in the crib, newborn and take the picture and everything. It's like something like the hospital does in the little football. I think in Scotland, they do the same thing like golf clubs, right?
A driver.
That's right. That's right.
Baby driver.
Yeah. That's right. Baby driver. Yes. Go out on that.
All right. So there's another record you wanted to discuss, right, Eric?
Yes. And this one is Martinis and Bikinis by Sam Phillips.
Okay.
Which was released in March of 1994. So it's celebrating its 25th anniversary. And this was the fourth Sam Phillips album produced by T-Bone Burnett, starting with her Christian rock album, The Turning, and continuing through the secular albums, The Indescribable Wow and Cruel Inventions. And as most people probably know, Sam Phillips and T-Bone Burnett were married in 1989 and divorced in the early 2000s. So to me, this album, Martinis and Bikinis, is probably the pinnacle of Sam Phillips' work with T-Bone Burnett. It's the most Beatlesque of their albums together, based mostly on Rubber Soul and Revolver influences.
Okay.
And it even closes with a cover of John Lennon's Give Me Some Truth.
Wow.
Sam Phillips was somebody that I became acquainted with through airplay on Chicago radio. I think I picked her up around Cruel Inventions in 91, And then for this album, I Need Love got a lot of airplay in Chicago. And that, I think, is another one of my all-time favorite songs. But overall, it's just power pop. There's one song at the beginning, Love and Kisses, which is only a minute long. And it kind of foreshadows some of her later work as she matured more Kurt Weill-esque and, you know, singer-songwriter-y. But this album, by and large, is Beatlesque power pop.
I am not very familiar with this at all, Jim. How about you?
No, I'm not either. I'm sort of furiously trying to look up things, so I have something to add to this.
I do know this record cover. I've seen it. And I know it was, you know, pretty well received. And as Eric said, what I mainly associated her with was being married to T-Bone Burnett. So that's right. Not good on me. I need to, especially if, as Eric is saying, that sounds really tasty to me. If, you know, Beatlesque and Revolver, and T-Bone Burnett is certainly somebody I really respect for not only his production work, but his own music. And, you know, lo and behold, if anyone out there is like me as a Dylan fan and you go watch the recent Martin Scorsese, I wouldn't call it a documentary, but the movie that he made, there's T-Bone Burnett right there in the Rolling Thunder review. So he goes way, way back and certainly knows what artistic and creative talent sounds like. So I've really got to get this record. I don't have it, and I don't think I've probably ever listened to it all the way through from start to finish. So this is perfect for me.
I thought about this one as something that your listeners might enjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, again, very literate lyrics. Of course, you've got the T-Bone Burnett production. Mm-hmm. It's excellent. Some of the other people who played on this album were Peter Buck, Colin Moulding of XTC, and Mark Rebo. So,
wow.
A stellar cast.
Yeah, I'm noticing Ben Montench also played, and Van Dyke Parks.
Oh, Van Dyke Parks did some arrangements or played? That's incredible.
He did a string arrangement.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, Mark Rebow is one of my favorite guitar players of all time, so I gotta listen to that, too. It looks amazing.
Some of the highlights I would say would be Baby, I Can't Please You,
okay.
When I Fall, Same Changes, and then I Need Love Again. So.
Okay. And was issued in 1994, yep. And it was on the Virgin label. Wow, that's so interesting. Okay, so
it got really, really strong reviews.
It looks
too,
like it.
Looking at that,
everything is like 5 stars all over the board.
Yeah, here. Yeah. So this is exciting for me because I'm not familiar with this album either.
It's amazing.
And
I know.
And so now I get to enjoy it.
Thank you so much. This is awesome. Yeah.
I think some of your listeners who like maybe Nico Case would enjoy this.
Ah, well.
Although I think Sam Phillips' voice is a little bit more distinctive than Nico Case's, but again, both strong singers and strong songwriters. So right down that vein. Unlike Lloyd Cole, I have kept on track with Sam Phillips. I've got several of her later releases, including one that she released last year, World on Sticks.
Uh-huh.
It's less of the power pop, more singer-songwriter, some acoustic, some, as I said, the Kurt Weillian show tune element to it. But there are some songs that rock on there, too, so that's worth listening to as well.
Okay.
Exciting. Well, thank you for this.
This is exciting.
Yes.
I mean, you know, when you spend all your life like us digging through record shops and you probably flip past a copy of this multiple times, right, and never even knew.
So. I was going to ask, did you happen to see Sam Phillips when we were record shopping today?
Well, as soon as we're done here, I'm going back.
You're
to
going
the
back?
Store. Yeah. Although I got to admit, I logged on to Discogs here during this conversation. I definitely see some copies that might have my name on it. So I'm gonna rectify this situation pretty soon.
Now, here's a question. Because I'm just not very familiar with this artist, but I remember at the time when she broke, you know, you had to pay some attention because of the name Sam Phillips.
That's
you're
right.
Like, wait, there's a Sam Phillips? Like, who?
Right.
A record out by Sam Phillips?
How is
that
son?
Possible? Right.
Yeah.
But I'm reading that that's not her real name. So she must obviously did that on purpose.
Oh, really?
Right?
That's interesting.
I think her, think her real name was Leslie.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She was Leslie Phillips.
Hmm.
And then
she recorded as a Christian rock artist to start. And I think The Indescribable Wow was her first secular album. And that's where she changed her name to Sam Phillips.
How interesting. Wow.
So she must have done that on purpose, right? Because I was, before I just looked this up, I was thinking, if her name was Sam Phillips, why did she use that instead of like Samantha or something like that? Like, because there's already a Sam Phillips in music history, like pretty well known, right?
Yeah, fairly well known.
but obviously this was done on purpose.
That's really interesting. Yeah. It's almost like if your name was Declan, you take Elvis as your name or something like that.
I am now going to record under the name George Martin.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. John Lennon. Here I am. Well, you know, it's interesting too. I did not know that at all. And that's pretty fascinating. And similar to T-Bone Burnett, you know, he began his career in a group called the Alpha Band, which was a Christian band. And much of his early music does have very strong Christian themes.
Of course.
It. Yeah, absolutely. So that's obviously some grounding they had in common. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Awesome. All right.
I love rock and roll.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is great.
Thanks, Eric.
Keep it up. Can you give us more next time? Fives.
I'm working on my topic for next time.
All right.
Well, it's great too, Eric. Not only do we thank you very, very much for your support and listening, but also it's great to hear that you do enjoy those album anniversaries. And so that's something, you know, we need to keep those on the front burner. Yeah. To do that. Cause they're passing by all the time.
We got
to
get back into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the Cure Disintegration is celebrating a 30th this year.
Oh, is it really? Oh, okay.
Be interesting.
I think so.
Okay. Would you be interested in our weekend hosting slot? Eric? Put that idea back on the front burner to get all these shows in.
That's right. So much. There's so much to discuss.
Yeah.
All right. As I mentioned before, anyone can go to patreon.com/suburbspod and you can see the various ways you can support the show if you are so inclined.
Yep.
We will offer these guest spots for people. Mm-hmm. We will go record shopping for you, or if you just want to get the sticker. You know, that's fine too.
That's fine too. Yep.
Whatever works for you. Also, you should listen pretty frequently.
Every day.
You know, we discussed, we're putting this thing out.
Every day, yep.
And you can find us on all the big podcast platforms and visit our website, suburbspod.com.
Yep.
We just saw intern Sam today.
We did.
He was with us at the record store.
God bless him.
We thanked him for his hard work by buying some records for him, too.
That's right. Yeah.
He'll report back on that later.
Yeah, that'll be an episode. And we're going to have Sam on soon because he was telling me as we were record shopping, he had taken a trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and wanted to talk about that as well.
Oh,
he'd never been there before, so he was really excited about that.
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Eric. You're out there in Illinois. We didn't mention that,
too. I'm in Central Illinois.
Okay. That's right. And did we discuss this before? So the college football is going on now. Do you root for the Illini or what do you got going on there?
I do root for the Illini, yes. Okay. And didn't do so well yesterday.
That's a tough existence.
Yeah.
I say that lovingly as an Indiana Hoosiers fan. I don't have anything to root for either. So we can, you know.
Hey, man.
Commiserate together.
Now that one of my offspring is studying to get a master's degree at the University of Wisconsin, I'm all over the Badgers. Let's go.
You don't need no stinking Badgers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Bandwagon jumper. Get the hell out of here.
Man, when I was back at Indiana, Wisconsin was no good. That was one of the teams that
is that right?
That was one of the teams we actually could beat.
So, I had no idea.
You know, that was like a homecoming.
Oh, was it?
Team? You know what I mean?
The worst team in the conference. Yeah, because you know you're going to win.
We'd either schedule Northwestern, which was really, really terrible back then.
I remember.
We're talking in the 80s.
Yeah.
Just
we had all those journalism
horrible.
Students.
And then, or sometimes Wisconsin or Minnesota. Wow. Those were like the other ones.
I didn't know. I always thought Wisconsin was good or something.
And then somewhere in the, I want to say like late 90s or something like that, they started
they
to
good.
Get good. And they're like a powerhouse now. They're like every year.
Yeah, they're ranked like top 20 or something. Yeah, it's crazy. I will say my offspring, MJ, went to VCU for 4 years, did not attend a single basketball game, and probably will never attend a football game. So that's just that's where my family's coming from.
Yeah. Well, you should head out there and go.
Yeah. I've been trying to bug MJ by texting about
Camp Randall Stadium. It's really nice. It's really nice.
I have a trip to Madison coming up in early November. So it might work out.
Beautiful setting.
Yeah.
And Madison is a great town.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right, we got off topic here.
Sorry, Eric.
So good luck with the Illini, I think is what we're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think they're going to get a lot of homecoming invitations.
Yeah, there you go. Godspeed.
All right, we'll talk to you later. And this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to everyone else later as well.
Jody wants a hat, although it hasn't rained for 6 days. She says a girl needs a gun these days, hey, on account of all the rattlesnakes. She looks like Eve Marie Sloan in On the Waterfront. She reads Simone de Beauvoir in her American Circumstance.
We don't need no stinking banter.